Bring impact to your organization by truly understanding consumers, communities, employees, and patients, beyond scores, beyond encounters, and beyond expectations. Join us for Human Understanding Beyond 2024 in San Diego. Our 30th annual event is set for August 21st through the 23rd. Learn more at nrchealth.com and let's revolutionize healthcare together.
This is Laura Dierda with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Brian Wagers, Chief Quality Officer at Children's Health. Dr. Wagers, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
It's my pleasure to join you. I'm excited for our conversation, and it's wonderful to be able to speak with your audience.
Absolutely. Well, the pleasure is all ours. And, you know, I'm excited to dig deeper into some of the things that you're doing at Children's Health that are really making a difference in patient care. But before we dive into my question, can you tell me a little bit more about yourself and your background?
Sure. So I've been here at Children's Health now for a little over a year. I came from the Midwest. That's where I grew up and did all my training, so to speak, in medicine. I'm a pediatric emergency medicine physician by training. So spent some time at Cincinnati Children's there doing all my training, and then moved on to Riley Children's Hospital, which is in Indianapolis, and was there for about a decade prior to coming down here to the sunny land of Texas and all the wonderful people that I get to work with every day down here. It's been fun.
That's great to hear. And, you know, what has been kind of the biggest thing that surprised you in that transition from the Midwest, you know, from Cincinnati and Indianapolis, then down to Texas?
Well, we won't even get into the summertime weather. People told me about that, but I'm not sure if you haven't lived through that, that you're not, I don't think any amount of telling can really prepare you for what it's like to go from, you know, from the Midwest down to the Southwest and experience that. Although I have to say I'm adapting pretty well. Yesterday, my son and I were out playing some basketball, and it was a 70 degree day here, and it's starting, 70 feels a little cool to me, where, you know, 3 years ago up in Indianapolis in late March or early April, and it had been 70 degrees, I would have felt like it was a heat wave at that point. So I think I'm adapting pretty well. But I mean, the nice thing is that people are people. Wherever you go, and people in pediatrics in general are wonderful. They're kind-hearted, they're mission-focused, and that, you know, that holds true no matter where you're at. And I certainly have found that here at Children's Health. Folks are incredibly focused on doing well and better every day for kids and really helping them live the optimum amount of health and life that they can by doing that. So it's been really, really fun to be down here and meet all of the people and get established over the last year or so.
That's amazing to hear. And, you know, what a great way to just really integrate into the culture there at Children's Health. It sounds really amazing. So, you know, from your perspective there, what are some of the biggest issues that you're following in healthcare right now? What's top of mind for you?
That's a great question. And, you know, it's not necessarily affecting us right now at Children's Health, but some of the big things that I'm trying to keep my finger on the pulse of, because it I think it has pretty big implications for us in healthcare, is one of the things is how do we transition folks, learners, you know, having grown up through the medical system myself, from medical school to residency and then fellowship and then transitioning into clinical practice, et cetera. How do we create effective transitions for folks coming from nursing school, coming from medical school, residency, et cetera, especially knowing the challenges and the changes really that have affected themselves in the medical landscape over the last 5 years with the pandemic and all of the changes that wrought in terms of the types of training, the amounts of training that folks got, et cetera, really trying to hone in on that. And how do we level set when folks come out? How do we set our team members up for success through orientation, through you know, targeted learning opportunities, through competency assessment, et cetera, really moving through all of that so that we ensure that we do what I talked about a few moments ago, really that we are delivering every day to our patients and families that promise that we make to them. And that promise is that we give them the highest quality, the safest care, the best experience that they can have anywhere in healthcare. So there's a lot of talk about that across the country, and how, and we're sharing a lot. People are, you know, passing things back and forth. Hey, we're trying this, we're doing this. There's literature coming out that we're looking at in medical journals and lay press, et cetera. So it's a robust discussion, and one that everyone is committed to making sure that we are delivering on that promise. So, and it's not just folks who are coming out of training, but it's also how do we serve those folks who have been in the medical world for a long time, and are experienced. How do we make sure that they're on that cutting edge as well, and their skills are sharp, and that we're really moving forward again, so that we can effectively execute on that mission of taking the best care of patients, because that's what we're here for.
Well, that's great to hear. And, you know, certainly such an important aspect of the role, as you mentioned, is being able to set teammates up for success, whether they're new coming into their roles and just coming out of training, or whether they've been experienced in the field and want to stay on the cutting edge and really continue to evolve with the industry. And I think that's just so fascinating. I know through the pandemic, of course, there were a certain number of challenges that hadn't arisen before, whether it was on the floor, on the front lines, or being able to train effectively. And then, you know, when you're looking at now, healthcare is so different than it was even 5 or 10 years ago. What do you see as being some of the areas where you have to double click on or really help people through now that maybe you didn't have to 5, 10 years ago?
You know, that's a great question. And I think it goes into something else that I'm following too, really honing in on, okay, what is your education experience? What was it like? And being very conscious, being very in tuned and engaged with folks through the channels of report, et cetera, to know, okay, this is an area where we need to bolster we need to put some resource, we need to spend some time, et cetera, whether it's just so in my world, you know, looking at hospital acquired conditions, et cetera, there from the whole country, we're a part of national networks that have put out best practice. And it's really making sure, all right, do folks know what those best practices are, what those bundles are, and can they demonstrate competency in those? And again, that crosses all demographics, if you will, from folks who are, you know, sort of fresh out of their training all the way up to folks who have been doing this for 30 or 40 years. Because again, we owe it to our patients. So really honing in on that and saying, okay, so this is our, we'll take CLABSI, for example, central line associated bloodstream infections. Here's our insertion bundle. Here's our maintenance bundle. Okay, all of the pieces of that. How do you do this? So in the bundle, it's, you know, scrub the hub for a period of time. Okay, how do we do that? Are we doing it for a standard period of time, which is in accordance with best practice? Are we allowing that to dry? Are we having the discussion about line necessity and line utilization, and are we converting folks from parenteral to enteral therapy so that we can then remove things like lines or catheters, et cetera, because if they don't have it, then they can't get a hospital acquired condition around that. And there's, again, robust communication and conversation going on throughout the country right now about what are the best strategies, because that learning isn't new, but how do we adapt that to today's environment? How do we take what we've learned over the last 10, 15, 5 years and really refresh that? How do we make that relevant and teach it and offer that in a way that really hits with folks and where they're at today?
That's such a great point. And thank you so much for going through and explaining that one bit deeper. I just think it's so helpful to see what you're doing and how you're looking at these particular issues. Now, when you look ahead, what are you most excited about and what makes you nervous?
Well, I think the first thing that I'm going to talk about really touches on both of those. And it's the concept of artificial intelligence and generative AI, and how does that work its way into healthcare? There are certainly places around the country that are using that. There are test cases, think tanks putting things out there, and the promise, the possibility really excites me, because right now there are so many things that we do in the day-to-day that can be made more efficient from AI. I think about the numerous emails that I send every single day. AI can help with that, right? It can automate some of those tasks. There will always and will need to always be the role of the clinician and being that in that human relationship with patients. So AI will never replace that. But how can AI help us do that, have more time to spend in that human interaction, which is why all of us got into medicine in the first place? Because we do, it sounds trite, and it sounds like something you would say in an interview when you're interviewing for medical school or nursing school. But when it comes down to it, we got into medicine to help people, to be there at times of great joy and, unfortunately, times of great sadness for them. But it's that human connection that draws us to medicine. And I think AI has the potential to free up time to spend more quality interaction with our patients, which I think that's exciting. On the flip side of that, it makes me nervous too, because we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. So fully vetting, fully testing, really making sure that there aren't unintended consequences of introducing things like generative AI into the healthcare space. That's a requirement, and we need to be very robust about doing that. Because again, we don't want to do things that puts any of our patients at risk. We don't want to have anything that takes away from that trust that people give us, and again, that human connection. So it excites me and it makes me a little bit nervous. And it probably makes me a little bit nervous because I don't understand it all. Once you understand things better, then you certainly, the nervousness, the nerves go away a bit as you get more accustomed to using tools. And that's what AI will be. It's a tool that we'll be able to use. And again, it just will take thought and intention about using that with the end aim of always improving what we're doing for our patients and families that we have the privilege to serve every day.
It makes a lot of sense, and especially as you mentioned, thinking through, you know, how AI and generative AI can make a big difference and be helpful in many areas, but just as it's so new and evolving and changing so much, it can certainly be a challenge to make sure that it's applied responsibly and there is not going to be any unforeseen negative consequences, in healthcare, which is such an important space, and for caring for patients as well. That's so interesting. Is AI something that comes up within your discussions with other clinicians or executives with the system? You know, what's the tenor about it? Are most people excited or most people a little bit more wary from your experience?
It's a great question. Yeah, I would say that it certainly comes up in more executive level discussions, but from that standpoint, it's more what's our take going to be about this and that sort of thing. And that, you know, that happens oftentimes in operational spheres, et cetera. But it also happens a lot when I'm at the bedside and when I'm talking with folks in the clinical world, because there is a lot of excitement about the potential for again, freeing up time and capacity to spend that with our patients. And that's really the promise with which people talk about it in the clinical world, and also automating some of those task things, you know, making it a better experience for patients when they call in to get an appointment, to get a schedule, to be able to look across different subspecialties or different areas of medicine and be able to increase the coordination and to make sure that there's all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed, et cetera. Really just removing some of that human capacity for for things to happen, right? For something to fall through the cracks. The more that we can automate, the more that we can error-proof, to use a concept from quality and safety, the better. And I think that excites physicians because we want to, again, we want to serve our patients in the best, most efficient manner for them that we can. We want things to be relevant and we want things to be meaningful to them. We want things to be easy for our patients to access the care that they want, need, and desire. So all folks are excited about the possibility of that and really being able to apply their brain power, their brain muscle, if you will, to really thinking about their patients and not having to think about other things that they do right now. Not to say that their brains aren't always focused on their patients, because certainly they are, but if you can automate things like charting and you can automate things like scheduling, then that's one less thing that physicians have to worry about. And again, it frees up more time, more mental capacity to see more patients, spend more time with them, think more deeply about them, et cetera, which is never a bad thing. It's always good when we can do that. And that's what really excites people.
Yeah, that's such a great point. And, you know, really, really interesting to hear kind of that tenor on both sides in the possibilities, you know, really to deepen that relationship between patients and physicians and clinicians. So that's great to hear. I think before we wrap up here, I was wondering, what do you think most effective healthcare leaders will need in order to be successful over the next 2 to 3 years, especially given all we've talked about, whether it's, you know, the addition of AI into more clinical spaces, or how you're able to kind of navigate some of the other workforce challenges and changes in patient expectations? What do you see as being so important for healthcare leaders going forward?
Wonderful, wonderful question. So I think it really, in my mind, really boils down to two different things. One is, healthcare leaders, to be successful, they really have to be focused on delivering value to the patient. And, you know, in maybe in times past, value was just, did I diagnose them correctly? Did I give them the correct treatment? And that certainly is an integral, fundamental part of that value equation. But coming into that increasingly over the last 5, 10 years is, how do we deliver that care to them? Do we do it in a way that gives them a good experience? Do we do that in a cost-effective way for them, taking into consideration that healthcare is very expensive and folks have limited dollars? There's lots of conversation about that in the news now with inflationary pressures, et cetera. So how do we think about all of those things while maintaining the primacy of getting the right diagnosis, doing the right treatment, being kind and fulfilling all those aspects of the Hippocratic Oath, in conjunction with having an eye towards what is offering value? And that's really the key question, is what does value mean to you as a patient? Because it's different for different people. So really that concept of how do we co-design, how do we co-develop care and care models so that it meets those multiple aims of right treatment, right diagnosis, efficient care, equitable care, patient-centered, timely, all of those different things that the Institute of Medicine kindly laid out in their reports many years ago, the STEEP framework. How do we really co-design and think about things with an eye towards that with patients? Because if we do that, then we will inherently deliver them valuable care to them, and we'll meet all the metrics that we need if we do that. It really will sum all of that up. And I think the second thing that I'll talk about is healthcare leaders who can tell good stories, who can build good narratives based on good data, and effectively marshal human resource, IS, IT resource, and others to deliver on those things we were talking about a moment ago, to give the value to patients, and in so doing, build that culture such that their team members are incredibly engaged and believe in that mission. Again, it's the storytelling, the narrative that really helps folks jump on to a team and be a part and feel a part of that bigger calling, that bigger responsibility that we have to our patients, and where do folks want to go? Where is our team going? The more that healthcare leaders can cast that vision, tell that story that's compelling based on data, and deliver value to their patients, folks will feel that. They'll feel the wonderment and the pride at being a part of a team that is doing that. And it will build and grow on itself. And we'll look, if we're able to do that, we'll look back in 10 years as this being a golden time in healthcare where we really can change things for the better and be better off, more healthy in 10 years than we are today as a nation. So I'm looking forward to that. The folks that I meet with and I talk with around the country are full of energy, are excited about doing things like that. So I'm really, really looking forward to what will it be in 10 years, 15 years, when I'm, you know, heading sort of towards the end of my career, looking back and seeing what was healthcare in general, what were we able to accomplish for our patients together with them. And I think we'll be in a better place as a nation for it.
I love that, Dr. Waitress. It's such a beautiful picture that you're painting of the future and how we can really harness the energy and passion that we have today in the healthcare space to move it forward and accelerate the great things that are happening. Thank you so much for jumping on the podcast with me today. I think this has been such a fun and interesting conversation, and I look forward to connecting with you again soon.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I hope you have a wonderful day.
Bring impact to your organization by truly understanding consumers, communities, employees, and patients, beyond scores, beyond encounters, and beyond expectations. Join us for Human Understanding Beyond 2024 in San Diego. Our 30th annual event is set for August 21st through the 23rd. Learn more at nrchealth.com, and let's revolutionize healthcare together.